Okay, I think we can get started. Hope everybody's doing well. Should to hear good news. The shiur today is dedicated in memory of Yaron Shiditch, one of the too many heroes that the Jewish people have lost in the last number of months. Today's Shloshim, Yaron ben Chaim Yisrael with Dvorah Loren. He's the Shloshim. He fell in Gaza exactly 1 month ago. Then the Shamshadam and Aliyah. And have good news for Klal Yisrael and Israel and around the world. And we should have many occasions to come and celebrate. Okay, last week we were talking. I was we were talking to Limanatam. You have to teach your children the end of the second paragraph of the Shema. So I just want to fill in the one point that we were discussing Yoshua ben Gamla, who's sort of a forgotten figure in Jewish history, though the Talmud, as we saw, says that without him, the Torah would have been forgotten from the Jewish people. It's an amazing statement. Without Yoshua ben Gamla, there'd be no Zoom classes, no Torah in motion, no Torah, no nothing. If you take the Gemara literally, maybe the Gemara is exaggerating, but that's what it says. She'il If not for him, nishkakach Torah Yisrael, the Torah would have been forgotten because he set up a public school system. So I mentioned that quite amazingly, he did this around the year 65, 66 CE, which is astounding because, you know, in the middle of a war, the Romans, the revolt, the Romans are destroying the Beit HaMikdash soon, exile. We don't can't worry about Jewish education. That's not our concern now. Our concern is just to fight. And yet, that was the time when he established. So I just want to show you one interesting piece about who he was. I mentioned I couldn't quite find it right on the spot, but if we take a look here, the Gemara in Yevamot says like this. Just before I share a little bit of a background. We all know that the halacha is that a Kohen Gadol is not allowed to, must marry a virgin. It's not allowed to marry even a widow. A regular Kohen cannot marry a divorcee. We're not going to get into why those halachot are, but a Kohen cannot marry a divorcee, but he can marry a widow. The Kohen Gadol, the one Kohen Gadol, is not allowed to marry a widow. So the Mishnah says as follows. So let's share and let's take a look at this sort of very interesting Mishnah. And then what does that have to do with anything we're doing? Okay. Anyway, so the rule is that the question is, what happens if a Kohen gets engaged? He legally gets engaged to a widow. And then when he is, after he's engaged, they appoint him to be, he's legally married. Like he gives her a ring. He says, Hareyat Mikudeshet Li. But they actually haven't moved in here. They haven't done the second stage of the wedding. They haven't done the nisuin. So in such a case, and is he allowed to marry her? He gets now appointed Kohen. The Kohen Gadol. So now he'll be a Kohen Gadol married to an Almana. And so that's the question, is that allowed? So the Mishnah says that that is allowed. The Mishnah does allow that. And the question is, and then the Mishnah says as follows, just it just says that they, Maaseh b'Yoshua ben Gamla, Shekidei Shed Marta Bat Baitu. So Yoshua ben Gamla, the one who set up day school education, so he was Mekadesh, he did Erusin, the first stage of the wedding, to Marta Bat Baitus, and the Kohen Gadol made, then he was appointed by the king, Minoah Melech Liot Kohen Gadol, but Kansan, he married her. And the Mishnah, so the Gemara has a fascinating comment. The Gemara says the way the Mishnah reads that the king appointed him, like, and this is how the Gemara explains.
I think you lost the sound again.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you now.
Yes. You're unmuted.
Martha, now hear me? Okay.
Yeah.
Hello? Okay.
You're coming in and out.
Baitus, I see that. Okay, I've got a whole thing on my phone. I will do that. I will try to make sure that that happens. Martha Baitus was a very wealthy woman, and she bribed Yanai the king,
as Yahushua ben God. He was an undeserving Kohen Gadol. We know during the Second Temple period, any of the priests were appointed because they knew the right people, favors, monetary favors, etc., etc. So that's his, how Yahushua ben Gamla got his job, which is amazing. In other words, this is the person. Without him, there would be no Torah. Without him, you have no education, no system. And yet, he got appointed through rough means. I think this is just a very powerful message. We know it's very true. People are very complex, even people who are quote unquote corrupt. I don't know if he was corrupt, his wife was corrupt, anybody, but he.
Hold up.
And we're back down again.
Can you hear me?
Yes, it's
coming in and out.
Okay, I apologize for that.
Now we don't hear you.
What did he say? Who was corrupt?
Marta Batbaitus was corrupt. She's the one who got him appointed. I don't know if this is a Zoom issue. I'm gonna, give me 1 second. I wonder thing. Maybe this will work. One second. I'm going to try something else. Even better.
Shirley?
Okay. Yes. All right. Let's talk about Parsha. And the question is,
Rabbi Jay, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can, yes.
I'm getting a message that says Jay Kelma's network bandwidth is low.
Okay, I don't know why that is, but that's, what can I
try closing other apps.
I'll do that. I don't think that's the issue. I don't have much open. Computer. This doesn't, I think we'll have to stop the class. It's too in out, and I think it's not fair to everybody. But if you can give me 2 minutes, I'm going to try to close my computer and reopen it and see if that helps.
Okay.
Okay, give me.
Sounds good to me.
Okay, yeah, hold on a second. It takes a couple of minutes for that to happen. And then we'll just have a short class that works. If not, we'll have to call it a morning, and I apologize. Okay, restart.
Think of all the mornings that this hasn't happened, and it's worked beautifully.
I know, I appreciate that, but I feel bad. I have all this stuff I want to, you know, and I'm just in the process of closing my computer and reopening it. Because I do have internet, that's what's crazy, but for some reason, Zoom won't let me open. And I'm on my phone and the phone keeps going in and out, I get it. So it's a little bit crazy. So, and of course now my computer's taking a long time to close down. If anybody has any questions in the meantime, I'm happy to answer while I wait for my computer to reopen. Zoom failed. Okay, hold on. Force quit. Okay. That I'll do. Okay, give me 1 minute. Hopefully this will work. Okay, now finally my computer is about to reopen. You can look over the partial while I'm while you're waiting. Okay. Let's see if this works. Okay, my computer is open. Now I just have to go to Zoom and see what happens.
Rabbi Kelman?
Yes.
Was Marta Baisus the daughter of the one who broke away from the Talmudim of who started Tzadok Baisus, that team, that pair?
Yeah, so I don't, right. You know what? I don't know. I don't necessarily think so. And I think I'm crossing my fingers, but this might actually work.
Recording in progress.
Okay, are we here? You can see me? You can see me? Wow.
Wow.
Yes. Okay. Thank you very much.
I appreciate all the people who, anybody who still say it is like a tzaddik. Okay. Thank you very much. And okay, let's get, let me, I'll forget the Martha Babaitis. I won't have my sources up because obviously they all got closed down. But let's talk in the time we have left. And I would go a little bit overtime, but I have to teach in chat. I can't really go so much overtime. But anyways, okay, let's discuss the third paragraph of the Shema, Parsha of Tzitzis. And I guess I entitled the class, Why Are There Three Parshiot in Shema? The question is, what in the world are we doing saying Shema? Why are there's the third paragraph of Shema? The first two paragraphs, I understand. It says B'shochecha uv'kumecha. You have to say it when you get up, when you go to sleep, when you wake up. But the third paragraph of the Shema has nothing about the morning and afternoon. It's as a matter of fact, it doesn't even apply. The mitzvah of tzitzis doesn't even apply at night. And the question is, what is the parsha doing in Shema? So I do need my sources, but okay. Anybody want to say why do we say this every day? Why do we talk about tzitzit and tzitzit itself? Is very strange,
which Holy Mitzrayim.
The Gemara, we'll see in a moment. The Gemara gives five reasons why we say this. Of course, you know, whenever the Gemara has five reasons for something, it means we don't really know the reason. If there's like, that's the famous idea, when Rashi is two explanation, it means no explanation is great. Now, it means, what it means when the Gemara says there are five reasons, which we'll get to in a few minutes, that means that probably no reason in and of itself would be enough to get us to say Shema. When you put all five together, okay, so the rabbi said, okay, we can add this in and we're going to say this twice a day. But before we get to those five reasons, which is why, just taking a look at the whole paragraph. So what does the paragraph say? The paragraph says that we should put on...
Lo tatsu.
Okay, yeah, so
I like
that's
loads
one of
of
the reasons. So
food.
every paragraph, every sentence has something that the rabbis felt was an important or a little bit important that you wanted to say, and we put all five of them together, the Exodus and not to follow our idolatry and tzitzis and doing all the mitzvah. When you put that all together, so we're going to say it every day. But my connection is, what in the world is the connection between tzitzis and all the mitzvah? In other words, it says, we discussed last week the word leman yirbu yimechem, in Parshat Bo, leman. The word leman always means for the sake of, the reason we're doing something. Leman yedu dorotechem. Okay, so here, leman tizkeru v'asitem mekol mitzvot. The reason we put on tzitzis is in order to remember all the mitzvot, in order to remember all the mitzvot, and we remember all the mitzvot, somehow through tzitzis. So how does that happen? Why don't we start there? That's, I think, Rashi discusses. How does that happen that through the mitzvot, through tzitzis, we can get all mitzvot done?
They work out the gematria of the tzitzis.
Okay, you want to do the gematria. So I'm going to share my screen because it's important. It's just going to take me 1 minute to get it up. So what's the gematria of tzitzis?
611.
What's the metric? Numerical value. No, what is it?
I think 611.
How do you get 611? Let's go. Tzadik is 90, right?
Right. It's 600.
Yud is 90.
600.
600, and then
it's
H3,
then
you have the
knot. Top is 400. Two nineties is 580, and two yuds is 600. So where do you get to 613?
The knots and the strings.
You have five knots and eight strings of the tzitzis. So first of all, that's a little bit strange. I can't show you. I'm not going to show you. But I wear tchelet. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. So I wear tchelet, this new discovery. For 100 years, nobody wore tchelet. Nobody that I know of who wears like tchelet has five knots in the tchelet. There are different views how to tie the tchelet. But in my tzitzis, it's like 7, 7, 3. All kinds of different ways to tie. But nobody has eight. Okay, leave that aside. But I find there's actually something fascinating that I don't know why none of the commentaries pointed out. Even the famous Rabbi Kiva Eger that I mentioned doesn't even point it out. And if you look here, tzitzit, right? Tzitzit, you see that? Six, tzadik, yud, tzadik. It's actually 590. You know why it's 590? Because we only have one yud.
One yud.
See, Rashi, right. But Rashi, look in Rashi, just see here. Rashi, let me find it. Maybe here, Lamantis group. Maybe he says it here. Where does he say it? Rashi says it's the 613, because in Rashi's chumash, he had 600. He had two yuds in his chumash, and that's why the gematria. Yeah, here Sheminyan gematria shel tzitzit. Notice there are two yuds in the Rashi. Sheish meyot. But in our chumash, look in our chumash, look and open up any chumash, open the art scroll chumash, you'll see there's only one yud. Okay, I don't get all excited about this, but people who take the Rambam 100% literally, that anybody who believes that one letter was added to the Torah or taken away is a heretic, you're going to have a problem with this Rashi. Because it means something was lost in our transmission. We're talking Rashi, we're not thinking from Sinai. So in Rashi's chumash, for sure he had two yuds. And in our chumash, for sure, we don't have two yuds. Now, this is going to excite you. I mean, this really, I don't want to go too far into this, but I alluded to Rabbi Akiva Eger. I think I may, many, many years ago, I mentioned Rabbi Akiva Eger, the father-in-law of the Chatam Sofer. He was only 1 year older. There was the second marriage for the Chatam Sofer. He was 1 year older, born in 1761, Rabbi Akiva Eger. And Rabbi Akiva Eger is a super genius. When I was in Yeshiva, Rabbi Deboria, where she would say, when are you going to know Gemara like Rabbi Akiva Eger? You know, people know Gemara, they knew it off by heart. Rabbi Akiva Eger knew the Gemara off by heart backwards. He said, I have my doubts if that's really true, but okay, we'll leave it at that. So Rabbi Akiva Eger collects and it's on Shabbos 55a. If anybody wants to look it up, Rabbi Akiva Eiger collects about 25 places where the Gemara quotes a verse. And the way the Gemara quotes the verse is different than our Torah. It's usually minor things, an extra vav, a missing this, a yud, a vav, something. But it is fascinating. Rabbi Akiva Eiger, he doesn't get too excited. He just collects all the places in the Gemara, or like in Sukkot, where the Gemara says there is a vav and Archa Mishnah doesn't have a vav. It's just very interesting. So the whole notion of tzitzit being 613 is dependent on there being two yuds, which we don't have in Archa Mishnah. It's also dependent on eight strings and five knots, which many of us don't have. Okay, but leaving aside, we know gematria in general is not really, I don't want to say it's not serious, but it's our perot lechokma. It's not the essence of how we derive things. There's very few halachot. The only halacha that I know of that is derived from a gematria, and maybe even this is not, I'd have to double check, but the only halacha I know that is derived from a gematria is that a nazir is 30 days. When a person says, I'm going to be a nazir, because the word yihyeh, nazir yihyeh, the gematria of yihyeh, I think it's to be 30. So I believe the gemara derives from there that a nazir should be 30 days. But I'm not aware. Maybe you're aware, please remind me if you know of any halakha that we derive from a gematria, a numerical value. But that being said, this is very cute. Let's say Rashi is correct. Fine. Okay, we do 8 and 5 and 2 years. It's very nice. What is the connection between tzitzis and reminding us of all the mitzvot, taryak mitzvot? So the true matter, and it's, you know, and if you look at the Persia.
Isn't it the blue and the tchelet and the sky?
Okay, so that's the other thing. Okay, so that's, yeah, very good. So the blue of the tchelet, so very nice. So the blue reminds us of the sea, and the sea reminds us of the sky, and the sky reminds us of the crown of glory of God. That's the tchelet is a reminder of the glory of God. And that's how the tzitzis reminds us of all the mitzvot. So it's very interesting. I you know, it did really, so, okay. If you look, what is the origins of tchelet, or when else do we wear tchelet? Who wears tchelet?
Well, isn't tchelet the color in the Mishkan, that's Mordechai.
That's Mordechai.
Mordechai.
It's also
in the Mishkan.
Yeah, it's in the Mishkan. In the Mishkan all over place. It's in the Kohen Gadol, the clothes of the Kohen Gadol. Right. The Kohen Gadol had the word Tchelet Vargaman, and in the Avnet, in the belt, he had to be full of Tchelet. All the curtains in the Beit HaMikdash were full of Tchelet. Achashverosh is having Tchelet. Why is Achashverosh? So Tchelet's not just a Jewish thing. Tchelet is a what we call the royal blue. I think that's what we call
royal,
it in English.
Royal purple.
Royal blue. Like, so basically, purple. Royal purple, okay. But the royal blue too. I think there is a book like that, the royal blue. I'm not sure. But the Tchelet somehow is part of, it's the uniform. It's the uniform of a king. And by wearing tzitzis, it's basically, we are replacing, and this may be, and that's why it's tied into the Exodus, right? We say tzitzit, and we say, remember, I'm the God who took you out of Egypt. Well, what does that have to do with anything? So where the a slave has to wear slave clothes. Tomorrow's the official Holocaust Remembrance Day, the National Holocaust Remembrance, January 27th, because the liberation of Auschwitz. We have Yom HaShoah in Nisan, but the world actually observes Holocaust Memorial Day is tomorrow. We know that the first thing the Nazis, Yimach Shemam, did, they shaved your head, they dehumanized you, and they gave you a uniform. You know, that's what they do. Everybody wears a uniform. You wear a uniform on airplane. Many, you're an athlete, Lahavdil, you wear a uniform. So a Jew, the tchelet seems to be the uniform of the Jew. And what's it telling the Jew? That every Jew is a king. Every Jew is a high priest, and every Jew is special. Every Jew has relations with God. Now, what are you going to ask me about that? That's very nice. What questions should you? I think you should, especially those who were at Rivka Press's, you know, Schwartz's, her shir last night. What question do you want to ask on that? So, and I.
Why don't women wear it?
Why don't women wear them? That's one. Number two, why does the mitzvah not apply at night? What do you mean? What's wrong with the nighttime? We have to say Shmat night, but that's the whole debate. Why tzitzis? That's the rabbis say the reason that tzitzis is the third parsha of the Shema is because it's the first one in the Chumash. The Gemara wants to know the order, right? Shema is in chapter 6, and Dvarim Bayam Shmo is in chapter 11. I get it, but tzitzis it's chapter 15 in Bamidbar. So it's way before. So why do we say tzitzis last? Why do we go out of order? So the Gemara says because the mitzvah of tzitzis doesn't apply at night. There is actually a fascinating debate, which I don't want to really get into, but just to make mention, when we say it doesn't apply at night, what does that mean? That it means it doesn't apply like at 5 o'clock, beginning in the winter, tonight, 5 o'clock. You go to shul tonight for Shabbos, you don't have to wear your tzitzis because it's nighttime. You go out to a wedding at night, you know, you're going to dance and get all sweaty. Who needs an extra piece of clothing take off the tzitzis? So that's one opinion. Their opinion, no, it's not a night day designation. It's clothing designation. Pajamas don't need tzitzis. Ksup Lila. Clothing you wear at night. There's a fascinating type of a discussion. You do have to wear it at night. And if you think about it logically, makes sense. If it's royal clothing, okay, the king doesn't go to sleep wearing his royal clothing. He wears regular pajamas like everybody. I don't know what exactly, but presumably. So that opinion is it's not. You do have to wear. That's why I think in general people do wear their tzitzis at night. They're sort of, you know, there is this. I don't know anybody says, okay, nobody puts on tefillin at night. Even those few people who are tefillin all day, nobody would. We assume it's forbidden even to wear tefillin at night. But tzitzis, no, everybody wears tzitzis. So perhaps it's because of this idea that really only the pajamas are exempt, not the nighttime. But be that as it may, if it's so important, so it's not at night. I guess I explained a little bit. Not woman, and why also is only on a four-cornered garment. So I don't have great answers to this question. Right? We all know that. That tzitzis is one of the strangest mitzvot in the Torah because there is no obligation ever to wear tzitzis. It's not like matzah. It's not like shofar. It's not like or tzedakah, let's say, you know, between person and person. There is no mitzvah in the Torah to ever wear tzitzis. And that's why there's a custom in Ashkenazic Jewry that single men don't wear a talit. Okay, you only have to put on tzitzis if you wear a four-corner garment. I think I mentioned to you before that the Bala Maor, Rabbi Zerachia Halevi, who was the Chavrusa of the Ravid, the famous, I think, of the Ravid on the Rambam, they're living in Provence in the 12th century. Bala Maor is one of the, like all of our greats, but he's really the one of the more fascinating characters in our tradition. I'll just tell you one other thing he said. He says in his shul, they used to daven, if I remember correctly, Malchiyot Zichronot and Shofarot at Mariv, at Shachrit, and at Mincha. You don't want to go to his shul on Rosh Hashanah, right? Why only on Mosfeh? We had a lot of fascinating things, but he didn't wear tzitzis. He never wore tzitzis in his life. I mean, maybe when he was three, his parents put, you know, tzitzis on him. But once he became the Bala Maor, he never wore tzitzis. Why did he never wear tzitzis? Because there's a debate in the Talmud that says you have to put petil techelet. You have to put techelet on the tzitzis. No, the techelet was lost. We'll get back to that, I hope. The techelet was lost until now. The view of Rabbi Huda is if you don't have techelet, you can't put on tzitzis. Like, let's say you don't have an arava. Can you take the lulav and etrog? Anybody?
No.
You have a beautiful etrog, $500 etrog. That would be actually terrible. Bal tashrit. But yeah, a beautiful etrog, $50, okay? A nice lemon, you know. $50 on the etrog, right? That's what it should cost less, but okay. You have a nice etrog, a nice lulav, beautiful hadas. And you only have, but you don't have an arava. Do you make a bracha on the lulav?
No,
I don't think so.
You can't, it's all or nothing because the Arava represents the simple Jew, and you cannot have the elite Jews, you cannot have the heterodox Jew without the simple plain Jew. I mean, that's one idea, but yes, without the Arava, no heterodox. Let's say you only have hand tefillin, but you don't have head tefillin. Do you put on the hand tefillin?
Yes.
Correct, yes, you do. So the Mishnah goes through a whole bunch of things. What pulls back the other. What if you don't have the nechassim for the korbanot, the salt, whatever? So that goes through. So you come to tchelet. You don't have tchelet. So Rabbi Yehuda says, you don't wear tzitzis. That's in the Torah. You put on tzitzis. There is a debate, by the way, how much these debates were irrelevant for 1,500 years. But today, we haven't come to a conclusion. I do something strange because, okay, I actually have two different ways I wear tchilis. I have it on my big tzitzis, on my talis, I have it one way, and on my tzitzis, another way. Why that's so, I don't know, because I'm strange. But the way it started, because Rav Schachter, when I put on tchilis, I was in Rav Schachter was one of the early proponents. I was, of course, his student. So when I got my tchilis, I asked him, you know, how to do tchilis. So he said to do, which something that really nobody else does, and we have to put four blue and four white. And he says it's the view of Rashi and Tosfot. It is the view of Rashi and Tosfot. Four of the eight strings should be blue. And he had a sort of a different way of tying it. And he says, we're Ashkenazi Jews. We follow Rashi and Tosfot. So fine. I called my Rebbe said to that. That's what I did. And for 20 years or 15 years, that's what I had on my talis, and that's what I had on my tzitzit. And then, you know, whatever, you develop the different things, you expand your repertoire of who your rabbis are, and the much more dominant view is either the Ravid or the Rambam. Whether you have two out of eight, which is really one out of four, or one out of eight. So the Ravid is two out of eight, which is what I have on my tzitzis here, if you can see. I have two out of eight. I don't know. You can't see, but whatever. And I twice think different. The Rambam says it's one out of eight, which is really half a string. You know, we have four strings. So whatever. So that's what I do now. And I think the real briskers are what the ones, the real briskers don't wear tchelet because Rav Soloveitchik said not to wear tchelet. Okay, we'll come back to that in a few minutes. So there are different ways to wear, which is kind of interesting. Because it's so new. It's so new, so there hasn't reached a consensus. It seems to me, from what I can tell, the view of the Ravid is the more dominant view. Two out of eight, that seems to, I think, seems to be what people wear. I don't know if anybody here wears tchelet, but be that as it may, the Baal HaMor said, if you have no tchelet, you can't wear any tzitzis. So he didn't wear tzitzis. And the view of the rabbis is you do wear tchelet with, you do wear tzitzis, even though there is no tchelet, because it's not ma'akev. Now, Rav Schachter has a very, unless he's changed his mind, because apparently he did slightly change his mind in how we tie the tzitzis. You know, it's new, so people learn it more, and they I thought like this. So he used to have the it was four, they were intermingled. Now he has four on one side, four on the other side. But what was I going to say? The tchelet... hold on a second. I forgot what I was going to say. But anyway, okay. How we tied the tchelet, how many strings is one thing, then how many do, but there is, like I say, there's no consensus. I there was something I forgot. Maybe it'll come back to me. But let me explain. So, I know. Right. Yes. So Rav Schachter has this extreme view that now that we've rediscovered tchelet, it's forbidden to wear tzitzis without tchelet. So I don't know if he publicizes that view, but I heard it with my own ears more than once that he said, no, when the Mishnah says you can wear tzitzis without tchelet, okay, that's if you don't have any tchelet. But once you have tchelet, you'd be violating Bal Tigra. You know, you're not allowed to add to the mitzvah to take away. So the Torah says, have tchelet, you're taking away that mitzvah. So he was of the opinion, at least that's what I heard from him, unless he changed his mind. I don't know. I didn't ask him recently, that it's forbidden to wear. He doesn't publicize this. There are other rabbis. I don't think he wants to make a big noise and tell everybody it's not to wear their tzitzis anymore. Because I heard from the people who worked on rediscovering tchelet that they went to some of the gdolim in the yeshivisha world, and you know they showed them their evidence. That's what happened. Rav Schachter was shown the evidence that it's real. He said, "Yeah, this is it. This is the real thing." That's so. And some of them, this is what I was. I mean, I also heard from the people involved that they said the Rosh Yeshiva. Some of them said, "You're right," but they don't want to wear it because it's too expensive. And if the Rosh Yeshiva in Ponovich puts on tchelet, so 20,000 pairs of tzitzit, they're going to have to buy the 100,000 pairs of tzitzit. Everybody's going to buy for their kid. And the The regular tzitzis is $10. The tchel tzitzis is $85. So it's going to be an enormous expense. I actually think that's a beautiful sentence. HaTorah chasa mamonam shel Yisrael. The Torah has pity on the Yuvizio. Listen, for 1800 years or 1500 years, nobody wore tchelet. And Rav Soloveitchik, as you may know, and I've mentioned before, was the problem is Rav Soloveitchik was really out of it from 1984 or so on. So, and the Metzuchet was later, but he was opposed. It seems to be that he was opposed to it, not necessarily because it's wrong, but because he has his whole view that a Masorah, our tradition has to be handed down from generation to generation. You can't, based on archaeology, which is archaeology and history and science, you cannot recreate a Masorah. That's his view. And Rav Schachter
I
disagrees.
think it was based on the Beis HaLevi.
Yeah, that's it. It's a little
Right,
bit
because
confusing. I don't want to spend the whole
yeah.
shiur on this, but
Okay.
let's say that. Now, my understanding is, and Rav Lichtenstein, as his son-in-law, of course, and his great student and son-in-law, did not wear tchelet. But my understanding is at least one, and I think more, of Rav Lichtenstein's children, after he passed away, put on tchelet, which is very interesting. They had respect in a
Here.
sense, for their father. But once their father passed away, you don't have to. I remember it was Rav Schachter who told the whole story. So, change your Rebbe. You don't have, you have a Rebbe. Doesn't mean the rest of your life. Everything he says, you develop. He always used to say, who are our Rebbeim? In other words, our Rebbeim today are the Mishnah Berurah and the Chayyadam and Rav Moshe Fine. In other words, you have a group of Rebbeim. You don't have one person. Things can change. So that's just very interesting. Okay, it is, let me, I, but okay, while we're talking on Tchelet, so I want to talk about this beautiful explanation Rav Soloveitchik has for Tchelet. So basically what we've said so far, it's Tchelet reminds us of the sky, reminds us of our mitzvot. It's a royal color. It's the malchut. It's our beged of malchut. So perhaps this is totally almost homiletical. The same way, in other words, when do we wear royal clothing? Only in the daytime when we go out in public. It's in other words, there's no tzitzis. Everybody agrees there's no tzitzis on pajamas because you wear it at night and it's night clothing, right? So if tzitzis, if we're going along this side, it's our clothes that we're the king. We're replacing Paro's clothes with God's clothes. So it makes sense. It's only in the daytime. Maybe it makes sense. Why is it only women? So probably, again, listen, if a woman wants to wear tzitzis, there's really no problem. We'll get there in one second. But probably because in the world, if we talked about evolving, morality and all that kind of stuff last night, there was the men who were this servant of God, right? Only male kohanim can't become tamei, because only male kohanim worked in the Beit HaMikdash. So some of the Torah felt that the uniform was worn by men. It was the men who were in the army. The men are in the army of God, not the women. So whatever it is, women were exempted, just like any other mitzvah. Among Brahma, with the exception of tefillin, a woman who wants to wear tzitzis can wear tzitzis, just like a woman can hear the shofar and can lulav. So you're looking at me like I don't know why nobody's looking at me that I'm crazy, right? What woman do you know? What Orthodox woman do you know who wears tzitzis? Anybody know any woman who wears tzitzis? Talis tzitzis? Anybody know anybody? So nobody knows anybody. I stopped everything. Okay, so we said last week. I mentioned many, many weeks ago that the Shulchan Aruch says the reason women don't wear tzitzis, they're allowed because men don't have to wear tzitzis. That's where we start. You don't have to. Why is this four-cornered like a uniform? That was the whole thing of the World War. So it's very fascinating. Somehow, we're on the one hand, like this is really important. It reminds us of all the mitzvot in the Torah. On the other hand, you don't really have to wear tzitzis because you don't have a four-cornered garment. So maybe everybody used to have a four-cornered garment, whatever it is. It's just, I also think there's a deep message here that sometimes the most important things are things we do as a volunteer. In other words, we're not for we want to demonstrate that we're part of God's royalty, we're the nobility. God is the ultimate king, and we're his noblemen, and we want to wear the special clothes to represent the king. So you have to want to wear that. So we have to go out and buy a four-cornered garment. If we force you, we're going to force you to worship. So I don't know. I'm just saying it because it is a little bit just say, don't have to wear tzitzis, no one wears tzitzis. So we go out and buy. So the Rama writes, no, the men don't really have to wear it either. So the woman never bothered to wear it. The woman didn't go. But it's really fascinating. Later on, different people get more upset. Like in their eyes, it's very moderate. Sounds like if a woman wants to put on tzitzis, she definitely can. Today, I think if you walked into an Orthodox shul wearing a talit, people would get upset at you. I think that's sad. I mean, I don't judge anybody. Why are they doing the mitzvah? Oh, they're doing it for feminism. I don't know why anybody does anything. It's not for me to judge people's motives. I don't know my own motives half the time. But so it doesn't really bother me. Who am I? But I'm saying it's just is kind of interesting. But let's get back to for selling the beauty of Tehillah. So this book, has anybody seen this book? Anybody who has a book, Man of Faith in a Lonely World? It's the second volume of Reflections of the Rav. Anybody want to raise your hand if you have this book? Anybody read this book? You read it. Okay. You remember his article on Tehillah? Okay. You're muted, but that's oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay.
I read it once, but I'd love to hear it again. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. So in Abraham Bestin, I think 1979, one of the first books on the Rav in English. Now there's much more called Reflections of the Rav. He took little highlights, put out two volumes. This is the second volume, Man of Faith in the Modern
One
World.
In Parshat Shavua?
That's much later. No, these were the first two put out. And then they put out Al HaTshuva. And it was, you know, they had very little. Now they put out, after he died, they put out all these series on different things. Yeah, they put out now on the Parsha. But this is interesting. So the Rav basically explains blue and white. Of course, the Israeli flag is blue and white, and it's connected, of course, to the Tehillah. That's not a coincidence that the Israeli flag is blue and white. So the Rav explains that white is clarity, puts clarity, distinctness, rationality, that makes sense. Blue, I'll just read to you what the Rav says of blue, because it's, you know, his language. I don't know. Okay. Tehillah, in contrast, is the likeness of the seas and the heavens and focuses our thoughts on the grand mysteries of human experience, which elude our precise understanding. The seas and heaven are boundless and beyond human reach. They encompass the abstract and the transcendent, ultimate and ends, man's metaphysical quests and his efforts self-evident and a temporal. It is in this area which remains a perennial enigma, resisting rationalization and quantification. It is the realm of philosophy and religion which postulates truism, even as the great mystery persists and precisely separate proves elusive. While the color white bespeaks the clearly perceptible, Tehillah refers to a realm which is only vaguely grasped. And then the Rav goes on to explain that life is made up of Tehillah and Lavan. All aspects of man experience partake of blue and white. In the scientific inquiry, physics, chemistry, biology, etc., also mathematical precision. The universe is not erratic or capricious. Our ability to land men on the moon at a predetermined spot suggests a universe attuned to man's intellect. It is when the focus of inquiry changes to man's psyche and abstract varies, the inexactitude and uncertainty in truth. Here one must labor with intuitive perceptions to be content with imprecise and relations. The social sciences, psychology, sociology, etc., therefore have the indistinctness of their subject matter. And the Rav goes on and on to explain how all of life, how Jewish history is blue and white. That he says they're always white because you have to have blue. You have to have the mystery, the transcendent God. Rationally, it makes no sense. How can Israel exist with all our enemies and accused for 2,000 years, dream of going back to Israel? That's the Tehillah of our tzitzit. It says in our personal lives, there are parts of, as the Rav puts, we all know it's true. We've all had periods, even of extended nature, which are rational, planned, and predictable, when we feel that we have a hold on events. At other times, however, mystery and puzzlement intervene, dislocating the patterns of our life and frustrating all our planning. The Rav very beautifully, as he's wont to do, as a great darshan will do, explains the white and blue of the Tehillah. It's not just like some little thing. It represents different. If the Talmud is telling us that the blue represents God and the sea and the heavens and the Kisei HaKavod, the crown of the seat of glory. So obviously it's telling us the blue is the mystery of life. And we have to mix the Tehillah and the and love. And the Rav goes on to explain, interestingly enough, how the Rambam held only one of the eight. It's Tehillah. In other words, he doesn't exactly say this, but I sort of developed that the Rav, the Rambam is the great rationalist. He's into the white. So seven of the eight strings are white. Only one is blue. Rashi, Tosfot, it's a different world. I don't know. I don't want to give the historical. You know, they lived in a more difficult, whatever it is. But that sort of, he explains even the arguments of how much Tehillah you have is connected to this idea. And I'll end with one other thing that he says, what color is the Tehillah? So I think everybody today is sort of a light blue. So if you look, Rashi and the Rambam argue, the Rambam is the sky at noon. A light blue, clear sky. Rashi says it's the sky as the sun is setting, a dark sky. As the sky is darkening, it's still light, but it's much darker. And the Rav explains that based on the Zohar. This is talking about Midat Din and Midat Harachamim. The Rambam sees the blue God as beautiful and helpful, God full of a mercy to the Jewish people. And Rashi sees the Tehillah to remind us of the harshness and the Midat HaDin, and if we don't follow the mitzvot, what will be? We follow the view of the Rambam, the way we wear Tehillah today. According to Rashi, the Tehillah is more connected to black. It's a sort of a darker blue. But we follow the, if you look at the people's, that it's very light blue. It's very beautiful blue to represent the Midat HaRachamim that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has. Okay, we didn't get to, I apologize for, really, I want to thank you very much for your patience. It's really very nice of you to everybody stay while they had our technical difficulties. So we didn't have time. Please God, next week we'll discuss the five reasons the Gemara says. We'll go through some of the ideas. But here, Tzitzis takes on, interestingly, even though we don't technically, nobody ever technically has to wear tzitzis. And only a man, if a man puts on four garments, he wears tzitzis. A woman could put on four garments, four corners, and doesn't put on tzitzis. But for everybody, the mitzvah of tzitzis is really a voluntary mitzvah. Because if you want to be part of God's royal entourage, we're not going to force you in this. Yes, mitzvot force us, but the tzitzis represents, you know, wow, we want to put on God's uniform. And that's only in the daytime. It's only in the daytime we're on duty, and the tzitzis lead us to remember all the mitzvot. It's the constant reminder of God in the world. It's a constant reminder that life is made up of rationality and mystery of things we don't understand, and that's life. And that's perhaps why we say it every single day. Every single day we meet, life is complex, and it's the combination of the blue and the white, but we should hope that we have the blue of the Midat HaRachamim, the light, beautiful sky. It's actually a nice day here today in Toronto, everywhere, right? Tu Bishvat yesterday, the beginning of the spring. So we should hope the environment, that's the sort of representative, you know, we should see, hear good things. I just want to say again, because we got so cut up, that this year today is dedicated, really, what's going on in Israel. We have the Tehillah, sort of, I don't know, the Midat HaDin, it's not for me to say what, but we see the mixing of the white and the blue. So I mentioned this year is dedicated in memory of Yaron Siditz, Yaron Ben Chaim Yisrael, Utvor Lorne, who was today's Ishloshi, we fell in Gaza, and we should have good news to share, and we should hear good things. Okay, and I want to thank you again. And okay, just Amen. Quickly, is Misora, and therefore we do. So yeah, just very quickly, I missed any chats that were there before. How does one wear, because when I came, how does one wear tzitzis on pajamas, bed? Yeah, you don't. I mean, if somebody is, God forbid, whatever, in the hospital, you don't wear tzitzis. You don't wear whatever. It's not. It's only if you have a four corner garment. If you can put on tzitzis, great. But tzitzis are very symbolic. You know, we make a big deal. We put it on our 3-year-old kids, but it's really. It's not so much because it's obligated. It's because we want to join, sort of, we want to wear the special garments. I think intuitively, the Jewish people understand that this is a way to have a concert. We wear it all the day. It's kind of like a kippah, just kippah is a much later thing, a much different idea. But it's, you know, that we have a constant reminder of God. But the kippah on a philosophical level represents the same idea. Okay. Everybody, thank you very much. Look forward to learning with you. Please invite a friend, and we'll please God see you next week. Thank you so much. Okay. And thank you. Thank you. Thank you. For thank you so much. Our short this week.
Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom.
Okay. Bye bye. Thank you.
Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom.